Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. Welcome back, and for those who were listening yesterday, we figured out the technical problem, so I had to rip my IT guy a whole new one, which is, we've resolved the problem. And so let me move on to the facts that the show is also sponsored by Reclaiming the Republic, as well as 1798part2.org, as well as republicreview.org. You are listening to the only show that is asserting the only constitutional solution to the federal government overreach. If you are ready to unleash your liberty and your sovereignty once again, then you will be very interested in the content that we're sharing, in how the states have the authority to step in and what we need to do in getting those states aligned and so forth. So I don't want to say we have all the answers, but we have those types of answers in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution. And so with that, I would just like to throw out my 3C policy. You'll hear me refer to this usually every day. And it is, if you know me, please keep it confidential. I go by GR, especially for the public arena. Secondly, and most importantly, be civil. And then third, it's also important, be concise if you want to call in. And then the phone lines are open, and we will be able to converse if a caller calls in and wants to share their concepts or ideas or what have you. I want you to know that, like every other day, I scoured the news. I looked, and I could not find any evidence, any sign that the federal government has any interest in disbanding any of its tyrannical roles, responsibilities, and powers. And again, that means that it's up to you and I to do this. And I will do this on a daily basis just to remind you the fact that they're not about to give up their power that they hold over us. They want to limit us more and more. And there are people that really hate the fact that you're living life the way you do. There are people that think that you ought to be walking to work, that you need to live in the city, that we need to return the country to, you know, the wildlife, let the wolves, you know, ravage the countryside and so forth. I mean, there are people that are literally putting individual property and individual sovereignty, individual liberty, and those types of things just out the window, and they're throwing out the baby with the bathwater, and they have no clue to, you know, what statist and what draconian concepts they're clinging on to. So anyway, I still have a standing question, though, and if somebody wants to call in and talk specifically about where or what in the Constitution gives the federal government the authority to create and manage land reservations for any purpose whatsoever, whether that be for people, whether that be for trees, whether that be vegetation, environmental purposes. Where in the Constitution do they have the authority to basically take state property, state real estate, state land, and use it for their own discretions? Because I think that would be a very good and interesting conversation. So as I scoured the news today, I thought that there were a few interesting notes that were worthwhile in sharing with you. And so I think one of those things is the fact that SCOTUS, for the most part, upheld most of Trump's travel ban. And so it was kind of a vindication. I mean, there's no doubt POTUS is doing an end zone dance and trying to make some political hay out of this. Sadly, this was a 5-4 ruling, and so that means that there are four people, and this kind of goes into this concept of due process, where the Supreme Court has really gone well beyond the boundaries of the Constitution and U.S. citizens, and they extend the constitutional rights and countrymen rights of, and because you got to remember that this nation was originally founded on Englishmen, right? And it was the Englishmen who demanded their rights because they were living under tyranny from Britain, and all of these laws, they're saying, you know, hey, we have birthrights as Englishmen, and we demand our representation, we demand you know, to be treated equally and so forth, because Britain was using the colonies to pay for its war and so forth, and not, you know, putting extra taxes on the colonies. And so these Englishmen stood up and said, hey, you know, we deserve the rights of, as Englishmen or citizens of England, and they were being treated as second-class citizens. Well, that's because we were the colonies, we were states of England, just like the Commonwealth, just like Canada still is the Commonwealth of England. Even though it may be its own country, it is still the Commonwealth, just like Australia. And so they really haven't broken away, if you understand what I'm saying. And so the people that come here that are not, and it doesn't matter whether you're an Englishman or not, but you have to be a citizen to be able to claim rights to the legal system, to any of the parts that are the privileges of a citizen. However, SCOTUS, a long, long time ago, in violating the Constitution, chose to extend citizens' rights to non-citizens. And so, I mean, we're now in this space to where there's no end to this. Why can't the Chinese in China vote in our elections then? Why can't the people in Africa be able to apply for welfare and assistance? Or why can't the people in the Middle East just be able to just move here because they're in a war-savaged nation or in an area that's just not good? Why? Because nations have their right of sovereignty and they have their rights of stipulating the conditions. And those types of things, those conditions, those laws, those rules in our form of government only comes from one source, and that is Congress. Congress has the ultimate authority over making laws that pertain to those delegated powers that are within the Constitution, Article 1, Section 8. And so SCOTUS decided, well, you know, since Congress isn't going to do their job, we're going to do it for them. So they start making these opinions and start extending these rights, privileges, and so forth to non-citizens. It's the same thing with states in the welfare state, in making sure that illegals or immigrants are being able to tap. This is all the progressive agenda for immigrants or non-citizens being able to tap into all our welfare state, whether they be refugees or what have you. You got to be kidding me, right? I mean, for them to just be given money and just to sit around and become indolent or, you know, become entitled is a far reach for, I believe, any progressive to start enforcing that. And I can't believe that states really haven't stood up and said, you know what, your behavior in D.C. is really making it hard for us to maintain our sovereignty, because what they're doing is they're allowing the masses to come in and overrun and enforcing the states to putting these people onto the dole is, you know, it just boggles my mind. Why would we allow that to happen? That is just a contradiction to good civil society in making sure that people are productive and people are contributing, because that is a good civil society. But it seems like SCOTUS has been so baked into the progressive agenda that they keep on making these types of policies. And again, the whole thing that I was starting to say is that it is sad that there were four justices that are still steeply baked into the progressive ideology. I don't know, but I will say this, that it was a good day for Trump on the fact that they the Supreme Court ruled 5-4 in a majority for him. But for 200 years, the court has been crossing the constitutional line of the separation of powers. And ironically, Congress is the entity with the authority to reel them in if you check the Constitution out. Congress can easily write a judiciary act that will stipulate or reconfine or place the judiciary back into the boundaries where they're supposed to be. Go read the initial Judiciary Act. I think it was 1790. And then I think they came out with another one a little later in 1792 or 17. They came out with two judiciary acts that really kind of set the framework. And the court has been just running over these lines of separations of power for a long time. And I pointed out before Trump even took office, because he was complaining about this rigged system and about the courts and so forth, why does he not identify precisely the source of the problem, which is Congress, as well as the solution, which is Congress, and poke them in the eye and get them to do their job? But you know, that's one thing Congress can do. Congress can reel in the court. But unfortunately, it just seems like everybody is accepting the status quo, that we've got, you know, these unlimited powers on every in every branch of government. And they're going to do everything they can, because Trump uses the EO just like legislation as well. Anyway, we will be right back after word from our sponsors, because we're up at heartbreak. And so please stay tuned. And I have a few more news nuggets, and then we'll get into the Pennsylvania ratification debates. We'll be right back. Thank you very much. Most people resist change, but how would you like to be rewarded in at least two ways for considering a new dentist? Dr. Tracy believes your smile is a reflection upon him, and that is a mutually shared reward between both him and you. Another reward is improving your overall health by working with your dentist like Dr. Tracy and developing a strategy in maintaining your dental health. But how would you like a direct incentive in considering a new dentist? Dr. Tracy and his staff from time to time offer a special referral program. For every new patient you refer who becomes a patient, Dr. Tracy will reward you with $50 off your dental work. Consequently, if you refer five people, that's $250 off your dental work. Give them a call and ask for the details and the availability of the referral program by calling 466-6614 or go to VonTracyDDS.com. Again, that's 466-6614 or sign up at VonTracyDDS.com. I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to, so that you can understand what we all need to do. I am trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with Republic Review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, process, this is what is referred to as Republic Review. Please read my argument for Republic Review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue. And it seems like the economy has been a really ignored issue. But these tariffs as well as the imposts and taxes and so forth have been starting to bubble up. And as you've heard today, I know that Trump went after Harley. And I'm a firm believer of economic liberty. And I believe Harley Davidson is seeking to manufacture abroad, to me, is like poking their customer in the eye. I believe this moves Harley closer to an endangered species list, because there has been a huge, let's say, to-do about, there's just been a huge brouhaha over the past several decades over Harley Davidson being made in America. I mean, even Reagan extended protection tariffs on Harley Davidson for a little while, and I think it was a 10-year tariff or something like that, but regardless, Harley was so successful in being able to reestablish itself that they actually requested those tariffs be taken away prior to their deadline, and they were a huge success story. Well, that's maybe not the case anymore, and so now Harley is looking to do manufacturing abroad. And, you know, I understand that I've been saying this for a long time. The American consumer, the American taxpayer, the producers of America have been subsidizing socialism around the world, as well as subsidizing the internal communist revolution right here in America. And so with Harley Davidson looking to leave, I think that may be, an interesting outlier, but I honestly believe, because if you understand who buys Harley Davidsons, I don't know if there's going to be people that are going to continue wanting to put their brand, to tattoo their brand on their arm or on their back or what have you, because that was a huge success story. I mean, how many other companies actually have their, people tattooing their brand on them? And so I think they're turning this corner. I'm not happy with the fact that they're doing this. And it has nothing to do necessarily with the tariffs and so forth. I just think it is a way they can make their shareholders a better profit line. And that's where the pressures are. That's exactly what happens when you become publicly traded. And if you've never watched, actually, there's a really good 60 Minutes exposure on a company called SAS, S-A-S. If you just Google that in YouTube videos, SAS, the best company in the world, the United States, or what have you. I forget the 60 Minutes personality that does the interview for this, but he goes in and he talks to the CEO, and the CEO goes, he has all of these flexibilities of making his company the most desirable company for people to work for because he is not publicly traded. He doesn't have to appease the shareholders and their perception of his stock value. What he's doing is he's appeasing the producers in his company. And I mean, the benefits that this guy provides is just incredible, but it's a very good success story. And that is where I believe Harley Davidson kind of failed, because they went into public trading to kind of bail themselves out instead of, sometimes it is better to fall and better to go under so that you can rise up and remake yourself than it is to be bought out. Anyway, I'm not sure if you've if you've been listening to this show, but if you go back and listen to my podcast, another reason why you want to listen to these is because I constantly blame the education system. Whenever we have mass shootings or what have you, it is a direct result of our education system. Our education system has created an immoral nation. I state the case. As a matter of fact, Milton Friedman stated the case, as well as a lot of other people, that the education system is where the federal government has crossed the boundary in the Establishment Clause by establishing religious doctrines to be taught so that we become a secularist nation, moving us away. And it's very anti-Christian and moving us away from those things that made America great. I mean, if Trump wants to make America great, he has to revisit those types of things. And I don't believe we're not seeing that. It's not like they're talking about reintroducing prayer or those types of things in school. It's like lipstick on the pig, if you understand what I'm saying. Anyway, another great indictment of our education system is that, if you didn't hear, there were some teens that were mocking a drowning man, and they actually videoed his death. And and you could hear one of the teens say, "Oh, he just died." To add insult to injury, though, you know, it's not only that they recorded this whole incident. The fact is that they were not charged for deprived indifference, you know, literally doing nothing while a person was struggling for their lives in the water. And so, to me, that this is just another little lump of evidence to prove that we have a debased and an immoral society. And we can no longer accept the idea that people, and I've been railing on this as well, so I'm marrying two ideas, that our school system is really our biggest problem as far as it is deteriorating our morality at such a breakneck speed that we may not survive what it is doing. And we will not be happy with what we reap from that. I don't even think the progressives are going to be happy with what they reap from that. Only the extreme progressives will be. But the other concept I've been railing on are the fact that people cannot leave their ideologies at home. And I've been saying in our government systems, we need to make sure that we have equal representation of a conservative as well as a liberal in the positions, both at the DMV, wherever you've got government and policies and those types of things, to ensure that we have equal representation, or at least equal protection. And I say that is because when people skirt the system, it seems like those people who are skirting the system seem to be the progressives and those who support the progressive agenda. And so we also need to apply the same paradigm to education. We need to ensure that every public office, especially the schools, possess equal representation for all staff positions and teachers. You know, if all of a sudden somebody changes their paradigm and they're no longer a progressive, they are a conservative or no longer conservative progressive, then there has to be an equalizing again. But I think it's important that we do not allow monopolies in these types of public institutions. That has been the problem over the course of the past, 150 years? When did they nationalize education? Back in the 1800s, when they started, when churches started abdicating their responsibility. We can no longer allow leftists to control this mammoth entity called the school system, called our education. The reason why we have been sliding into the abyss of immorality and godlessness is because of our national indoctrination system. I mean, if you understand that they teach, and I'm working on an article that actually I'm trying to put a comparison between Christian doctrine and the antithesis of that being taught in school. So, you know, just one example of that would be creation and evolution. And you can, you know, just go down the list of different doctrines of Christianity and how that the school system actually teaches the opposite or something that is a detriment to that doctrine. whether it be chastity, whether it be what have you. There are a multitude. I'm at 30 some odd now, and I'm just trying to go through and make it a comprehensive list as much as possible, but trying to identify the facts that, you know, Christianity teaches this, and when you send your kids to school, they will learn this in exact opposite of what you would want them to teach, especially if you are a Christian. Anyway, as you know, it is 2 weeks away from the Utah primary. And as I've been groveling for help, I'm getting some help, but I've not gotten anybody to help me with Utah. So I've not been able to even approach. And to be honest, I'll have to come clean here. My focus has been on Wyoming and the Dakotas, just due to the fact that they're less populated and there's going to be a little bit, I would say, easier access, not necessarily easier, because when you're calling somebody and they're going, well, who are you and why are you calling me? And, you know, I would say that in the heartland, you know, out in the country, they're very leery of anybody talking fast or anybody that's, you know, trying to talk to them about what's going on. So it's been an interesting process, but I have had zip as far as being able to reach out to Utah. And so, unfortunately, I don't have anybody to throw out to say, hey, please support this guy. I've been too busy doing other things, but we're at a hard break. And so please stay tuned. And we've got the Pennsylvania ratification debates coming up. Most of my listeners understand the importance in having strategic goals, but do you have a long-term strategy for your dental health? Too many people are only focused on whitening their smile. I understand the appearance of your teeth can give you confidence, but this can risk your future health in only addressing the cosmetics of your teeth, and many dentists will take your money just to do this. They say failing to plan is planning to fail, and if you don't have a long-term strategy for your teeth and dental health, then you need a new dentist. Every dentist provides a dental plan, but Dr. Tracy and his staff develops a strategy to help you maintain and restore your dental health to what it needs to be. To develop a strategy in maintaining your dental health, connect with Dr. Von Tracy, DDS.com. That's VonTracyDDS.com. So you too can develop a strategy in maintaining your dental health. The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our Constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, health care, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities and powers that belong to the states, is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review. So please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to reclaimingtherepublic.org and go to the contribution page, and you can become a listed supporter of liberty. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, Don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open. And before I get into Mr. Pennsylvania and the ratification debates, I want to make sure it is, Mr. Wilson, James Wilson. Before I start citing that, I want to reiterate why the focus on the states. Because if you understand your contracts that you hold, whether it be an employer contract, whether it be your cell phone contract, your rental agreement, or what have you, you have to understand that as a party of that contract, especially if you are the servicer of the contract requiring people to sign that, so if you're a landlord, you want to make sure that that contract is as airtight as you possibly can. And that is why the states precisely did the ratifications the way they did, and they wanted to make sure that they weren't going to allow the possibility of a Leviathan from coming in. The fact is that they did not do a very good job in passing down the critical information in keeping the federal government in check. And they failed to create the boundaries or barriers to keep the federal government out of the state's business. And so the whole point in going through, with this education, SCOTUS, all of these types of things, is to hopefully help you in the marketing so that you can understand that I'm trying to market or motivate you with the fact that if we don't get started in calling for an audit and calling the federal government for encroaching upon the state's rights, then we will have an insurmountable odds when we all of a sudden have a surge of kids, a surge of illegals and refugees hitting our poll system, wanting to be able to vote themselves more benefits at your expense, and or, as I've been predicting, they're looking forward to the day to make this an unarmed society. They want to, these kids have been programmed to vote away the ability or your right to bear arms. They want to create a police state, and they want to subjugate us. And these kids have no clue with what they are doing because they've not been taught to think. They've been taught to, act, to do what they're told. And so I'm hoping that this stimulates you, motivates you into saying, I've got to start getting active. And so where do you start getting active? Right there in your county, working at the grassroots of your county level, and start talking to those who represent you in the state and start demanding that they start understanding the Constitution as a basic premise that it is a contract, and that they need to start supporting the Constitution. And if you want to model, as a matter of fact, if I don't have a petition for your state, I'm going to actually start getting more petitions up so that they all are modeled towards every state. So you can literally just take it, print it out, and start handing it out. That way you can actually start demanding that your state legislate. Go read that petition, by the way. That only holds them to calling for an audit. It does not keep them from doing anything else that may currently be important business. Let's say that they're already in the middle of receiving funds for the federal government or what have you. It is not necessarily a day of reckoning in closing and shutting down that loop immediately, but what it is, these actionable items are strictly for calling the audit so that the state legislatures can truly understand every single person in the legislative bodies, both the Senate and the representatives, the House, whatever they call them in the state, because each state's a little different. I will just tell you that if they put their arms around how big of a mess the federal government has gotten into their business, I think they will wake up. And they will say, you know what, we actually don't need this money. We actually don't need to do this. I know that there's some people, I was talking to a guy today that felt that many of the sportsmen feel like if the federal lands gets taken back by the states will just sell it and it'll become private property. Well, the states can easily pass laws and say, unless you've developed that property, you cannot, you know, tell people to stay out. And as a matter of fact, the smartest thing the states would do is not sell that property. If it's forested, timbered, or what have you, the smarter thing to do would be to allow revenue to be utilized. In other words, harvesting the timber and replanting and so forth. It reduces fires, and it's called forest management. It's the same thing in, you know, the mining and so forth. There are ways of doing this so that the states can unleash an economic engine that they've had actually scuttled for years and years and years. I know in the Pacific Northwest, Oregon, Washington, I don't know about Idaho, but I know those two states, you know, have basically stopped harvesting their timber. There's very limited timber harvesting since probably the 80s. And that's why we have rampant forest fires out here. And so anyway, I want to basically go into this one repetitive thing, that the words of our founding documents that I am citing, are these the words of deceit, lies, or are the words that we have been taught from the progressive education system and all these professors and teachers and so forth and politicians, are those lies and deceit? So let me dive straight into this, because this is kind of a long, actually I'll go into the next three. But this is Mr. Wilson. This is at the Pennsylvania ratification debates. And he basically says this: but it is not pretended that the line is drawn with mathematical precision. The inaccuracy of language must, to a certain degree, prevent the accomplishment of such a desire. Whoever views the matter in a true light will see that the powers are minutely enumerated and defined as was possible, and will also discover that the general clause against which so much exception is taken is nothing more than what is necessary to render effectual the particular powers that are granted. Now, if you remember me talking about Virginia, if you remember me talking about North Carolina, Massachusetts, and New York, every single state had a problem with the necessary and proper clause. And they all clearly delineated that necessary and proper clause only pertained to the enumerated powers, as he just said, that were minutely defined as well as possible that they could have done at that time. And that way, the necessary and proper clause only allowed them to execute what was necessary and proper for them to execute that one particular power. So going on, Mr. Wilson then says, I hope, sir, they will not be the enemies of each other or resemble comets in conflicting orbits, mutually operating destruction, but that their motion will be represented by that of the planetary system, which each part moves harmoniously within its proper sphere, and no injury arises by interference or opposition. Every part, I trust, must be considered as a part of the United States. Can any cause of distrust arise here? Is there any increase of risk, or rather, are there enumerated powers as well denned here as the present Articles of Confederation? If you understand, the Articles of Confederation were already starting to fail, and very specific states were having real problems. Shays' Rebellion had already occurred up in New England, and so he was talking about, are there any greater risks, or will the states be able to work harmoniously together? And so what he was basically saying is that the enumerated powers were so confined into the general speak that if you actually read the Federalist Paper number 40, Madison goes into the details that most of the enumerated powers that they were granting the federal government, there were only a few that really jumped out that were different. One of those was taxation. They were able to have direct taxation to the states and actually were able to enforce taxation, because at that point in time, states who were part of the Confederacy were not paying. Massachusetts paid its debt, and it, you know, used a heavy hand in paying its debt. Many other states were not paying their debt. Virginia was another one that paid its debt. Half of the states did not pay their war debt. And I will tell you that that becomes a real problem if all of a sudden a nation does not have good faith and credit with other nations, because you can't do trade or what have you. You end up accumulating debt and you end up getting basically either foreclosed or you become a worthless nation and then you squander. We're at a hard break. I've got a couple of more. One more Wilson, and then I'm going to get into some McKean quotes and citations out of this, and then we'll wrap it up. So please stay tuned. We'll be right back after we're from our sponsors. Thank you so much. It's that time of year to get that dental checkup and cleaning. I know many of us are creatures of habit, and we tend to settle for what we know, and many of us are procrastinators. I was that way myself with my past dentist, jumping from one dentist chair to the next. From all the hopping, I've learned that all dentists are not equal, and I would challenge you to consider checking out Dr. Von Tracy. I work hard to make a living, and I'm not one to throw my hard-earned money away on just a good dentist. That's why it took a couple of years to find a great dentist. From the excellence of his staff to the quality of the work, Dr. Tracy is the difference. I know it's time to put standards to our loyalty, so I would ask you to give Dr. Tracy a try by setting up your next appointment with him. Just go to VONTRACYDDS.com or call them at 509-466-6614. Again, sign up at VONTRACYDDS.com. Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Mobius Strip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Mobius Strip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255. Now, so I'm not sure if anybody has read Locke, but Locke, John Locke, in his two treaties of government, and as a matter of fact, his book on civil government, Volume 2, was just a standard. Most of John Locke's writings were a standard reading for the framers, for the people who lived in this country at the very beginning of the Constitution. Same thing with Plato, Aristotle. Those were the books that were common, and that's what everybody read. And that's one of the reasons why most of the people at that point in time agreed. Remember, I have this premise, and if you've ever watched my presentations, you'll hear me say this at the very beginning. because I truly believe this. Reasonable people, equally informed, seldom disagree. And the problem is that middle part, equally informed. Back in those days, most people were equally informed because they read the same books. However, today, there is we've allowed real trash to become a part of our education system, where kids are learning really bad ideas, statist ideas, needs of control, and those types of things, instead of ideas of liberty and so forth, such as Locke, Bacon, Montesquieu, and so forth. Anyway, McKean, in the ratification debates there in Pennsylvania, he actually cited John Locke, and he says, again, because it is unnecessary for the powers of Congress being derived from the people in the mode pointed out by this Constitution and being therein enumerated and positively granted can no other than what is positively granted convey. In other words, he's basically saying that because we the people have conveyed only these powers positively to the federal government, that that's all they can do. How many times did we hear this throughout my reading these citations, that the federal government is confined to those enumerated powers, that they cannot assume any new power? And so we're now being told, or we've been told shortly out the gate, well, that doesn't necessarily apply anymore. When I say shortly out the gate, about 25, 30 years, when most people were not watching C-SPAN, most people weren't there in the halls of Congress really overseeing what was being said, what was being done, as far as even reading the Supreme Court rulings. The only few people that were interested were the parties that were interested in the decisions. I wouldn't believe that it was one of those things where people, there weren't a lot of honesty or integrity groups like the Heritage Foundation, the Freedom Foundation, and so forth and so on. What they had back then was, I'll just call it a blind trust. They didn't think that these people, these leaders that were being elected after the framers had finally started dying off and leaving the government to other people, they didn't believe that they were that bad of people. And maybe they weren't really that bad, but they started attacking the foundation of the Constitution. The Supreme Court started creating unconstitutional footings in the opinions that they were writing. Those opinions were just literally drivel. They had no emphasis. They had no founding in making any new laws or changing, but it after they started creeping this concept of precedence and case law, which is unconstitutional for the Supreme Court to be able to move the nation or what is constitutional, what isn't constitutional by their edicts, what ended up happening was we slowly eroded this limited government into allowing them to self-aggrandize themselves. McKean also says this. He says that in all cases enumerated, except where the Supreme Court has original jurisdiction, and he quotes, they shall have appellate jurisdiction both as to law and fact, with such exceptions and under such regulations as the Congress shall make. Now, I'm stopping right there, close quote. That is from the Constitution, and as I told you, Congress has the power to reel in the court. Because I'll read it again, because he's quoting this. He says, they shall have appellate jurisdiction both as to the law and fact, with such exceptions and under such regulations as the Congress shall make. So Congress is the one that makes the regulations as to what the court is going to hear and as far as their jurisdiction. And Congress has never reeled them in. They are way out of control. And so Congress just need, like I said, back at the beginning, before Trump took office, I said that he should actually reach out to Congress and tell them to reel him in. If you read the Constitution, there it is. But anyway, He goes on and says, from this, it is inferred that the trial by jury is not secured, and an objection to set up the system because they have jurisdiction between citizens of different states. Regulations under this head are necessary, but the convention could form no one that would have suited each of the United States. It has been subject of amazement to me to hear gentlemen contend that the verdict of a jury shall be without revision in all cases. Juries are not infallible because they are 12 in number, when the law is so blended with the fact as to be almost inseparable. May not the decision of a jury be erroneous? Yet notwithstanding this, trial by jury is the best mode that is known. He was really trying to defend the whole point of the appellate court not having trials by jury and not having a trial by jury as the appeals move up. And so the real point that I'm trying to make out of this is they clearly delineated the Congress. He clearly delineated the Congress has the power of controlling and ensuring and protecting the judiciary from not getting outside of its creep, that they were held very specifically to the Constitution. Their jurisdiction is to the Constitution and to ratified treaties. So with that, the next citation that I have, because I've got time for one more, and this is Mr. McKean again, and he says, and in declaring, this is about the Supremacy Clause, and in declaring that this Constitution and the laws of the United States, which shall be made in pursuance thereof, when he say in pursuance thereof, in pursuance of the Constitution, and all treaties made, or which shall be made under the authority of the United States by a two-thirds majority of the Senate. I'm throwing these words in here because he's literally quoting the Supremacy Clause in Article 6. And he says that this has at last been conceded, that though it is explicitly enough, yet it gives Congress no further powers than those already enumerated. It's not that the Supreme Court or the federal government or the president is supreme in anything that they feel necessary and proper, or anything that they deem themselves to be supreme on. They are only supreme in those enumerated powers. So I'll read that again. He says, this has at last been conceded that, though it is explicit enough, yes, it gives Congress no further powers than those already enumerated. In other words, you can't make up powers for yourself to be supreme in. You're only supreme in the enumerated powers within the Constitution. Those that first said it gave Congress the power of superseding the states cannot persist in it, for no person can, with a tolerable face, read the clauses over and infer that such may be the consequence. In other words, that the federal government will be able to literally just take upon themselves and impose whatever they feel that they want to do. And so I will kind of leave that there for you because I'm running out of time. But I want to make sure that you understand that the Supremacy Clause was strictly tied to the enumerated powers, that those powers given to the federal government, they were supreme in those things of national defense, of being able to control foreign commerce, being able to control the disputes of commerce between the states, not to regulate and to create laws, policies to the nth degree of commerce in between the states. That when we read the ratification debates and when we read the facts of Madison and talking about the Commerce Clause and the limitations of the Commerce Clause, the federal government was never to be able to dictate that you would be able to only flush your toilet or be able to, you can't grow wheat without being taxed by taking yourself out of the wheat consumption, which is Wicker v. Filburn. All of these things have been portals that they've been using, and they're unconstitutional. And so with those who are listening on the terrestrial airwaves, I hope you have a great day. We'll be back tomorrow, same time, and we will have all sorts of new material for you. God bless. And those of you who are streaming, I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to break out Madison's bounties on the cod fishery bill once again, because I think it's really important that we actually have a good perspective on what is and what isn't within the realms of the federal government. Because Madison, I think, schools Congress in this debate when he goes into the cod fishery debate regarding using the general welfare clause to help out the fisheries and so forth. So anyway, I bid you a farewell. I am G.R. Mobley. I am Reclaiming the Republic. And with your help, we'll be able to do this. God bless, and we'll see you back tomorrow.